I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Looking to part ways with complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping? Then give your business the edge it needs with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Keep everything simple with clear upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there. And keep it all reliable with on-time ground shipments. It's time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Holly Fry.
And I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
So, recently Tracy sent me an IM, an instant message, and said, "Everything I'm working on is horrible and sad. Please tell me you're picking something lighter."
That's true story.
And I had not finally decided on what I was doing for this particular recording yet. But one of the things on my list was a bit of relative hilarity and fairly harmless stuff called the Dreadnought Hoax. It sounds like it could be ominous, but it's not. It's funny. So we're using this as a bit of lighter fare to balance all the dark stuff that's been pretty common as of late. And really, the more I read about this, and there are several articles that I found that were written throughout the years on April Fool's Day to kind of laud this particular man that we're talking about that spearheaded this as like the perfect patron saint of April Fool's Day. But I don't want to wait a whole other year to do him because he's funny.
Yeah. And it's so rare for our show to actually fall directly on the day too, which always, I don't know, always makes me feel weird doing a specifically April Fool's episode when our episodes are coming out on like the 3rd and the 5th that week or something.
Yeah, because so many listeners aren't necessarily listening on the day of publish. It just is a little bit tricky. So anyway, we're getting tomfoolery in May. We're talking about William Horace de Vere Cole and the Dreadnought Hoax.
To start this prank story, we have to start out with the prankster Holly just mentioned, who was at the head of it, because he's one of the most infamous pranksters in history. Pranking people seemed like it was his life's calling.
Yeah, William Horace de Vere Cole, as I said, who went by Horace, and usually he's referred to anytime someone's writing about him, like even his friends, as just Cole, was born in Ireland on May 5th of 1881 into a wealthy family. As a consequence, he is one of those children of wealth who did not really have to take on a real profession, which is probably why he had so much time for pranking. His mother was Irish, and his father was an officer in the 3rd Dragoon Guards, which was a British Army cavalry regiment.
He attended Eton as a boy, and while he was there, a bout of diphtheria at the age of 10 permanently damaged his hearing, which left him very frustrated as he struggled to hear his teachers. His hearing impairment also kept him from joining the army. So he attended Cambridge instead of pursuing a military career as his father had done.
And while he had always been a practical joker as a kid, his more Loki-like characteristics really came into their own while he was at Cambridge. And it was there that what would be considered the predecessor prank to the Dreadnought hoax was hatched.
During his time at Cambridge, Cole and his close friend, Adrian Stephen, decided to masquerade as royalty. At the time, the Sultan of Zanzibar was in England on a tour, so Cole decided that Stephen should pose as the Sultan and that he should play the part of the Sultan's uncle and translator, and they would see who they could fool.
So he and his friend got themselves into costume, and they telegrammed the Cambridge mayor's office that the Sultan was about to arrive. And so the mayor's office quickly rallied to accommodate and properly greet their noteworthy guest.
When Cole and his friend arrived at the Cambridge train station, the town clerk was waiting for them. They were taken to a formal reception with the mayor that was arranged in honor of the Sultan, and then they were given a tour of the town. They visited academic institutions, and they were introduced to prominent members of the community.
Yeah, they were basically given tours of the school they attended and had to pretend that it was all amazing and new to them. They almost ran into a little bit of trouble when a woman who had been a missionary attempted to speak with the Sultan in his native language, which neither Cole nor Stephen knew. And they managed to dodge this well-meaning lady by telling her that she should only address the Sultan directly if her intention was to become part of his harem. And that pretty quickly ended that conversation.
I like how a lot of the success of several of their pranks relies on, like, the lack of cultural literacy
completely
around them. So after this long day of tours, receptions, and meet and greets, Cole and Stephen were taken back to the train station where they vanished into the crowd of travelers. The mayor and his colleagues were none the wiser that they had spent their day being duped by college students.
Cole and Adrian Stephen with him played all manner of pranks throughout Cole's life on a variety of scales. So I put together a list of a handful of them.
Once he threw a lavish party, but only invited guests who had the word bottom in their names. And that was something that none of them realized until they were actually there and started introducing themselves. I'm just imagining that the introductions themselves were also comical.
And apparently if he attended that party, I think he was incognito. He wasn't there, like, as the host. He just kind of watched it all in anonymity. At another point, he challenged a member of parliament to a foot race for fun, and he even offered the man a head start. And once that gentleman had started running, Cole started calling for the police, who stopped that man and found Cole's watch, which had been planted on that poor, unsuspecting politician in his pocket. So that one is a little bit mean. I mean, it's more than a little bit mean. But some of his do take on a slightly cruel tone rather than just being funny.
I also feel like today that would be a much more dangerous prank.
Yes, for sure.
On another occasion, he purchased strategically selected theater seats for an event. And he gave those tickets to bald men. So from the balcony seats, audience members could clearly see that their heads spelled out an expletive.
That to me is one of those things that is so, it takes a lot of forethought on that one to, like, figure out which seats you would have to purchase to spell out a dirty word. So he gets points for ingenuity on that. He definitely was smart. And in another somewhat daring stunt, he disguised himself as a workman. And with several similarly attired friends, some accounts indicate that these were not his friends, but people who were actually workmen that he had duped into it. And other accounts suggest that he had basically gone to a bar and found some inebriated men and said he was giving them work. The thing with pranksters and the stories around them is that they get told by a lot of different people and the details get very shifty. But We do know that he and a number of people disguised as workmen strolled onto the street at Piccadilly Circus and set up barricades around the heavily trafficked junction. And then he and his fellow pranksters then proceeded to dig up the street, and a policeman was rerouting cars around them, presuming that he and the rest of them were city workers. And after digging a trench across the busy road, he and these other people retreated, at least in the versions where it's his friends, they were with him, to a nearby hotel room that had a view of Piccadilly Circus so they could watch the chaos below as municipal workers sorted this confusing situation out.
This is one where I hope they were all his friends, because I don't like this prank very much if it's like getting people who were just trying to do their jobs in trouble.
Right.
When Cole got married in 1919 to Mavis Wright, he had to keep the date of their wedding a secret. This was because he had made someone else's wedding into a prank, and he was afraid that something was going to happen to try to get back at him for it. What he had basically done was he stationed an array of young women outside the church and had each of them fling themselves at the groom when he arrived, begging him not to abandon her.
Yeah, every woman was like, "Don't leave me, Eddie." Which, if you were a nervous groom on your wedding day or a nervous bride, could be both infuriating and very upsetting.
I think I would be real mad.
Yeah, it would depend on the person, I think. There are some people that could get away with that with me and others that could not. The timing of his wedding was also perfect for Cole because it was right before April Fool's Day. Which will come up in a moment, why that was interesting. The just-married couple traveled to Venice for their honeymoon, but even then, Cole was focused on pranking.
The night before April Fool's Day, he took leave of his new wife, and in cover of darkness, he got a hold of a massive load of horse manure from the mainland. He spent the night covering the Piazza San Marco with it. The city did not have any horses, but he basically created his own manure crisis as a joke, and so when dawn came, the residents of Venice were left wondering how in the world all that horse manure got into their city.
Yeah, accounts vary from whether people thought like some sort of mad stampede of horses had come through, or if they thought some weird thing had happened where someone had accidentally tried to fertilize the square. There's a lot of, figuring out. And next up, we are going to talk about Cole's friend group after they attended Cambridge, which was an unusually talented and prank-prone group. But first, we're going to pause and have a quick little sponsor break.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel,
for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road trip or waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian, someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet, and also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day, seriously. It's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if everyone's being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource, and paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go papertarian? Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
In the second half of the first decade of the 20th century, Cole and Adrian Stephen, along with Clive and Vanessa Bell, Adrian's sister Virginia, who would later be known as Virginia Woolf, painter Duncan Grant, and other writers and artists formed this social group, which eventually came to be known as the Bloomsbury Group or the Bloomsbury Set. The name Bloomsbury came from the district that they frequented near London.
Most of the members of the Bloomsbury Group had been friends since their time at Cambridge, and many of them had also been members of a semi-secret club at Cambridge called the Apostles. Truly unique in the story of the Bloomsbury crew is how many members went on to become noteworthy figures. In addition to those that we already mentioned, E.M. Forster, John Maynard Keynes, and in even more loose connections, T.S. Eliot, Bertrand Russell, and Aldous Huxley were all linked to it over the course of its 2+ decades.
Yeah, it wasn't like they officially said, hey, we're forming a group. It was just basically a social circle that happened to include some really amazing people.
Yeah, it was sort of a moniker applied to them.
Correct. And this intellectual clique routinely met to socialize and discuss philosophy and politics and art, etc. But they were unique in some ways in that they were not precious about any of it. They really maintained an attitude of irreverence when they were discussing all these things. And that also made them the perfect co-conspirators for someone like Cole.
Cole's most famous prank involved a battleship, the Pride of the British Navy. The British Navy had launched this new battleship in 1906 and called it the HMS Dreadnought. You've probably heard the name Dreadnought before to refer to a class of ships. When I told my husband what Holly was researching, he started talking about his many sci-fi stories
yes.
he likes to read, where like that's a commonly adopted name in the world of science fiction. That name for the class of ships came from this 1906 vessel, and that's because the HMS Dreadnought was a technological marvel of the time. It was massive, just a behemoth, and it was no joke when it came to naval power.
The Dreadnought was 526 feet, which is about 160 meters long. It was crewed by 800 men, and it was powered via steam turbine, which was an advancement over the steam pistons of earlier naval vessels. And that gave it a significant speed boost, allowing it to travel as fast as 21 knots, which is about 24 miles per hour. And while that may not sound especially speedy, for a ship of that size at that time, it was an absolute marvel.
The Dreadnought's firepower was similarly groundbreaking. It was equipped with no close-range guns. Instead, it had five twin turrets, each of which housed two 12-inch guns. That's about 30.5 centimeters. There were also five Maxim machine guns, four torpedo tubes, and 24 3-inch guns, 7.6 centimeters.
Yeah, basically, it was a time when the Navy was shifting from the idea of having to get close to your enemy to basically saying, no, we'll just hit them from a distance, it's fine. And they had incredible firepower to do it. And the HMS Dreadnought so advanced naval technology that those advancements set the standard for more than three decades after it was launched. It quickly doomed its predecessors to obsolescence, and it drew a lot of attention from the public as well as the military. While its might was absolutely uncontested as a marvel the world over, its high cost was a slightly more contentious issue in Great Britain.
Additionally, Great Britain and Germany were in the middle of an arms race. So while the Dreadnought was a point of pride, the military was also keen on maintaining a level of secrecy about its exact specifications and abilities.
Yeah, they would certainly do sort of showcase events with it, but it wasn't like they were publishing what it really was capable of, and a lot of people really wanted to find out. So a few years into the Dreadnought's life, Cole and his friends from the Bloomsbury set decided that they would love to see this ship up close and personal. And to accomplish this task, Cole and his cohorts launched a prank very similar to the one that he and Adrian Stephen had pulled at Cambridge years before. Allegedly, a friend who was an officer on another ship, the HMS Hawk, had also egged Cole on in this plan.
Ooh. On February 7th, 1910, the 28-year-old Cole led his friends as they hatched their prank, which was incredibly brazen. This time, Cole sent a wire to the Admiralty with information that the Emperor of Abyssinia was en route and wished to see the fleet. This prank had been carefully planned to give the Admiralty no time to verify this information. The wire was sent at 3:07 and said that the Abyssinians would arrive promptly at 4:20.
The Emperor and his cadre were played by Duncan Grant, Virginia Woolf, who dressed in full beard to hide her feminine features, Anthony Buxton, Guy Ridley, and Adrian Stephen. Those that were playing the Abyssinians darkened their skin with makeup and assembled what they felt would pass for Abyssinian garb. Some of the accounts I read suggested that they actually paid an extremely high amount of money for a theatrical costume designer to create these outfits for them, and that to sell the prank, Cole insisted that they actually use real jewels on all of their accoutrements rather than using paste.
Cole introduced himself as Chalmondeley of the Foreign Office, who was serving as escort to the foreign visitors. Adrian Stephen was the, quote, translator. He had looked up a handful of Swahili words in an effort to sound convincing if he needed to, although apparently when push came to shove, he forgot everything he had crammed and instead performed the role by stringing together odd snippets of Latin and Greek that he had learned while studying classical literature.
Stephen would later write of his gibberish language, quote, I was provided by my education then with a fine repertory of nonsense and did not have to fall back entirely on my own invention. I had to take care that neither the Latin nor the Greek should be recognized, so I broke up the words and so mispronounced them that probably they would have escaped notice even of the best scholar.
Apparently, Buxton was extremely good at parroting the nonsense that Stephen came up with. He would reuse some of the made-up phrases throughout the day to help cement this masquerade.
Yeah, so it did start to sound like a cohesive language to people that were maybe with them for long periods of time, but it was absolute nothingness. A full military greeting awaited them at Weymouth when they arrived, including Admiral Sir William Wordsworth Fisher in full formal dress. The Emperor, and we use air quotes every time, and his entourage were indeed invited aboard the Dreadnought for a tour. And there was a live band to greet them, and African flags were flown along with the Union Jack.
His disguises tricked everyone. Even one of the Stevens' cousins, who was stationed aboard the dreadnought. He did not recognize either Adrian or Virginia.
Yeah, he did not realize that his lady cousin was one of the men he was talking to. The group was also invited to lunch on the ship, but they declined. The pranksters were presumably afraid that they might give themselves away if they stayed too long, but the excuse that they gave at the time was one of cultural specificity. They claimed that the royalty of Abyssinia could only eat specially prepared foods for religious reasons. And their other motivation for getting away before attempting a meal was their fear that their fake beards were not going to hold up to the rigors of chewing and wiping that would be required if they sat through a full lunch.
I would also imagine that if you're not used to having a beard, eating without getting your food in your beard might be challenging.
Yeah, those beards are a trick.
In the late afternoon, the weather posed an additional danger to these pranksters. The wind started blowing and threatened to dislodge their fake facial hair. It also started drizzling, which was in danger of making their makeup run, so they made a hasty exit with the excuse that they had to catch a train.
And as they left, the Navy band played the Zanzibar national anthem after apologizing to the prank delegation that the Abyssinian anthem could not be obtained in time. If you recall, Cole's earlier prank at Cambridge involved a claim of being from Zanzibar, so there was an extra layer of humor to that particular choice, although the Navy certainly could not have known it.
When the visit was concluded, the Navy arranged for a carriage to carry what they believed was the Abyssinian entourage back to London. Even when they got on the train, Horace was still keeping up the act and demanded that the princes of Abyssinia only be served by attendants wearing white gloves. So while the train staff ran to purchase said gloves, the rest of the train was delayed.
And we're about to get into what happened after the Dreadnought hoax, but first we're going to pause and have a quick word from a sponsor.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper, waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian, someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet. And also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day, seriously. It's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if everyone's being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource, and paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go papertarian? Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
Horace Cole later wrote about the hoax in a letter to a friend. Quote, "It was glorious, shriekingly funny. I nearly howled when introducing the four princes to the admiral and then to the captain, for I made up their names in the train, but I forgot which was which, and I introduced them under various names, but it did not matter. I was so amused at just being myself in a tall hat. I had no disguise whatever and talked in an ordinary, friendly way to everyone. The others talked nonsense. We had all learned some Swahili. I said they were jolly savages, but that I didn't understand much of what they said. It began to rain slightly on the ship, and we only just got the princes under cover in time. Another moment, and their complexions would have been running. Are you amused? I am. Yesterday was a day worth the living."
Exactly how this prank came to light is a little bit hazy. There are two primary accounts. In one, an officer from the Dreadnought asked if he could wear a medal that had been presented to him by the, quote, emperor with his uniform, which unraveled the truth. But there's a high probability that Cole himself actually spread the word of the prank by contacting the papers, complete with a provided photograph of the pranksters in costume. They had, in fact, stopped into the Lafayette studios to have their portrait made in full regalia before they got on the train to Weymouth.
Adrian Stevens' own account claims that he had no idea who leaked the story, as the entire group had agreed that they were not going to go public, but that once he saw the photo in the papers, he just presumed it was Cole.
The Daily Mirror ran the story, complete with the photo, recounting how the group of fake Abyssinians had used the words bunga bunga as part of their faux language while they utterly duped the HMS Dreadnought's high command. Bunga bunga would go on to have a small life of its own. It appeared in songs and became sort of a shorthand for teasing members of the Navy, as this whole incident became a massive embarrassment for them.
Yeah, I'm trying to imagine like a similar modern day thing where like one of our most important military assets is kind of made into a laughingstock. You can imagine the Navy would not be thrilled. And not long after this prank, the Emperor of Abyssinia did travel to London. This was within a few weeks of when they had done this. And he did ask to see the Navy's fleet. And he was, according to the account of Virginia Woolf, turned down because the Navy's policies on guest tours had been significantly tightened thanks to Cole and his coterie.
There was very little in the way of repercussions for the Bloomsbury set, even after this whole thing became public knowledge. The Navy allegedly wanted some sort of action taken against the group, but none of them were ever formally charged with any crime.
There are reports that either Cole, who openly admitted that the plan was his, or his collaborator Duncan Grant, was captured by several sailors from the British Navy and caned as a form of vigilante justice. But while there is some consistency in the caning portion, and we're going to talk about that in just a moment, just who received it varies from account to account.
But Stephen's writing states pretty plainly that while members of the Navy did show up at Cole's house to get some sort of justice, Cole made a deal with them. They could cane him if he could then cane them back. So 6 ceremonial taps on the hindquarters were administered by each side, and that was the end of it.
Yeah, it seems like in the end they all just kind of had a bit of a laugh and could say, yes, we punished him without really punishing him. Stephen also wrote that he and Cole ran into one of the officers from the battleship in the street after the hoax. Quote, one day, walking with Cole near the top of Sloane Street, I saw the dreadnought captain and his wife. He saw us, too, and recognized us and pretended at first to be horrified and then to call a policeman. After a second or two, though, he began to laugh and, in fact, took the whole affair in the best of good humors.
Horace de Vere Cole, despite having achieved what could easily be the most famous prank of his career in tomfoolery, continued this hobby for the rest of his life, including some of those pranks we mentioned earlier in the episode.
One of his later in life bits of jokery stemmed from the fact that he was often mistaken, particularly due to his white mustache, for Ramsay MacDonald, the first Labour Party prime minister. And when Cole would realize that someone thought he was MacDonald, he would launch into public speeches vehemently opposing the position of the Labour Party, simply to enjoy the confusion it caused for everyone.
Not everything was jolly throughout his life, though. Undoubtedly, the wealth and station he was born to had protected him from serious consequences for all of his pranking, even though a lot of his pranks were kind of jerk moves that came at the expense of other people, and his family was not merely rich, but also well-connected. His sister married the politician Neville Chamberlain, who would eventually become Prime Minister of Great Britain.
Yeah, there's definitely, like, a degree of privilege that protected him from ever having anybody really punish him.
I think it might be, like, 8 or 10 degrees of privilege.
Yeah. It's a wide degree, for sure. Yeah, he, you know, if somebody of a more middle-class or lower-class background tried these same stunts, I suspect it would not be greeted with the same guffaws and good humor. But unfortunately, Cole's fortune and disdain for propriety and his love of jokes could not protect him from the pitfalls of life. He actually lost that fortune in a real estate scheme, and his wife Mavis, whose own inheritance had also been lost due to her husband's very poor financial decisions, left him not long after.
Cole did eventually remarry, but that marriage was not ideal. His second wife had a child with another man while she was still married to Cole. Eventually, he had to move to France, where he could manage with far less money than his life in London had required.
Horace de Vere Cole died in Honfleur, France, in 1936 at the age of 55. He was at that point destitute, having failed to regain his financial standing. And remember that this was going on in the late 20s and early 30s, so there were some big financial things happening that would have made that very tricky. But so famed were his exploits that even though he died a pauper, his many tricks were lauded in his obituaries as great achievements, and they were in very big newspapers throughout both Europe and North America.
That same year, Adrian Stevens published a brief memoir about his friendship with Cole and their tomfoolery, but it's mostly about the dreadnought hoax.
Yeah, he talks a lot about their time at Cambridge, but it's all sort of as a groundwork for this one big event that they pulled off. In modern mentions, Cole's exploits actually played a small part in Downton Abbey. In the fictional use of his handiwork, the Dowager Countess threatens to expose Chamberlain as an accomplice in a number of Cole's pranks. There have also been various, like, in the 40s, there was a comic written about the Dreadnought hoax, and it's shown up in a number of places, but the Downton Abbey one is the most recent.
Yeah, I feel like it's shown up in fiction that I've read, but I would be hard-pressed to tell you which specifically.
Oh, yeah, definitely has.
I wonder if word of this ever got back to Abyssinia and how they felt about that. Because like we said, like, this whole thing really depended on, like, the stereotypes that they made up and also other people not knowing about other
yeah.
cultures.
Well, and remember that both in Victorian and Edwardian time, there was this whole fascination with other cultures, but very little vetting of information. So people would just be like, oh, really? That's how it is? Fascinating. I love it. And they would never, like, do any deeper research. So there's no telling how much, like, how many people were completely misinformed as a consequence of this that maybe never realized they had been pranked. Like that or the Zanzibar episode during the Cambridge thing. We're like, did you know people from Zanzibar, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Did you know that you can only wear white gloves serving the Abyssinian emperor?
Yeah, it's very, very, it's weird.
It is weird.
that part is very problematic, but mostly it is funny. He lived a life where he was very dedicated to amusing himself and others, sometimes at the expense of a third party, but,
at least for the most part, except maybe the part with the workers in the street, the targets were not people just generally trying to do their jobs.
Yeah. And nobody, you know, fortunately there was no violence, which makes this one a little bit easier than some of our recent episodes. So if people were hurt, it was at least not physically. I have listener mail that relates directly to my life.
Oh, great.
Yeah. It's from our listener, Julia, and she says, hi, guys. My sister and I both love your show. I like to listen while I'm painting. It makes the hours fly by, and it's a great way to squeeze some extra learning into my day. The 38th anniversary of the May 18th, 1980 Mount St. Helens eruption is coming up, and I'd love to hear your take on it. I recently moved to Perth, Western Australia, from Washington State, and I am missing home. Plus, my birthday is the day before the anniversary, so it would be extra special podcast for me. I grew up under the shadow of St. Helens in Battleground, Washington, so it's close to my heart. Aside from the usual tropes you hear about the eruption, it is a fascinating geological site. St. Helens also happens to be the most active volcano in the Cascade Range over the last 4,000 years. There are some really cool connections with indigenous history there, too. One of my history professors told us that native peoples avoided settling near St. Helens because oral histories and folklore warned that it had an angry spirit. On the other hand, nearby Mount Hood, one of the least active, was more benign and therefore a safe place to live. Pretty interesting, and another reason to take oral testimony seriously, although please fact check me. Anyway, thanks for hearing me out. I know you get lots of suggestions. Keep it up. Thanks for the fun and learning. I will never ever do Mount St. Helens, probably. Which is not, sorry, Julia, I don't mean to shut you down. I literally watched that thing go off
right
from the deck of my house as a kid. So one, it would make me feel terribly old to talk about it as a historical event. But two, kind of what we've talked about recently, like with our move episode, we usually try to go a little further back than that for our history pieces.
Yeah.
Not always, but usually, you know, maybe when I'm in my 70s, I'll talk about St. Helens as a historical event. I don't know. Yeah. It was a very fascinating time, certainly, and my impressions of it are still quite strong. And I remember the various weird things about living there during that time and ash all over everything we owned all the time for months.
Well, and that's also one of the things that we talked about when we made an exception to our general rule in our move bombing episode was how it's kind of weird sometimes when we do an episode that a lot of people are likely to have personal memories of. Like the tenor of our listener mail is very different from the rest of the time. But that is one that, like, I remember that happening, and I left. I lived on the other side of the continent, not in a volcanically active place. But I vividly remember footage on the news and all that kind of stuff and wondering, maybe worrying, maybe I was just curious and kind of fascinated. There was a mountain near us that had kind of a volcanic shape. It's definitely not a volcano, but I would just be like, but mom, what if it erupted?
Yeah, that's pretty natural, I think, for a kid to do. Yeah, my big fear, because I was 9 when it happened, was what about the animals?
Yeah.
which, you know, it took a while for the mountain to sort of regain its flora and fauna, and I'm sure it's different than it was before then. But anyway, so that's why we will probably never talk about it. Sorry to dash your hopes. But one, I don't want to feel like I'm a million years old. And two, it's so close that so many people have a really strong memory of it, that it would just be a little weird. It's kind of like telling people what their memories are, which is strange.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you want to write to us, you can do so at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com. We are also available across the spectrum of social media as @MistInHistory. That includes Pinterest and Facebook and Instagram and Tumblr. Yeah, come and see us. And you can also visit our parent site, which is howstuffworks.com. Type in almost anything you're curious about into the search bar there. You're going to get a wealth of information. You can visit me and Tracy at mistinhistory.com, where we have all of our episodes ever that have happened since way before Tracy and I were working on the show, as well as show notes. Now we have, I think we've probably transitioned over enough that it's not a huge surprise to anyone. Our show notes and our show page are consolidated into one for one handy place to access everything. And yeah, you should come and visit us there at mistinhistory.com and at howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Looking to part ways with complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping? Then give your business the edge it needs with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Keep everything simple with clear upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there. And keep it all reliable with on-time ground shipments. It's time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.